So we're continuing to consider communicating effectively with our Muslim friends, and we're continuing considering how Jesus communicated in different ways. Through stories is another way. So collect stories. I gave some stories. I mentioned the pot which somebody cooks in. If you clean the outside and not the inside, it's an example of outward cleansing from sin, but the heart is not changed. And chicken pox, if you start treating every pox and don't get the inside changed, a remedy for what is causing the trouble from within, there's trouble. And no Muslim woman treats every pox of her chicken pox, but they will recognise it comes from something within. Find examples, and there are many. Poems. Sometimes Muslims are very keen on poetry. And one of my Muslim friends was a poet, and he used to write poetry and recite it at Mashaira. A Mashaira is a gathering of poets. And in the home of my friend Bilqis, I once attended a Mashaira. There were about 40 people present. Half of them, about 16 of them, were women. And we sat round in this lovely room in her very wealthy home. And the television came to put it on TV, a Mashaira, a poetry reading. There was one other foreigner there, Anna Marie Schimmel, who's a famous writer on and student on scholar. She's German. She lives in the United States, and she's a professor in one of the well-known universities here. She's an expert on the life of Muhammad Iqbal, the poet, poet and writer, philosopher of the subcontinent. She was there, and I was there. I was there because I was a guest in the house. And various people, it started quite late, various people recited poems, men and women, and she was asked for a poem, and she is very fluent in about six or eight of the languages that Muslims speak, like Farsi, Persian, Pashto, Urdu, Punjabi, Sindhi, and Arabic, and a few more. So she had probably made a poem up, and so I was asked for a poem. So I said, well, I'm not a poet, and I haven't actually got a poem, but I am in Hyderabad because one of my books is being published here in Hyderabad for the jubilee of the Henry Martyn Institute. And I've written a book about Henry Martyn. And in my book, I've got a picture of a photograph of some of the well-known poetry of a Sufi poet, Saadi, whose tomb is in Shiraz. And so I'll read you that. And it's Sufi poetry which talks about Jesus. So I just read it. And I knew this whole thing was going on in Urdu. I knew that if there was anybody who wanted to talk to me about Jesus, probably at midnight over refreshments, they would come and find me. And sure enough, one woman came to talk to me about Jesus. Anyway, that's poetry. It means a lot, much more. We don't have these kind of poetry readings about Jesus. But in Muslim setting, it might be good if we had some poems. And like my friend Tark Kashmiri, he took part in these kind of activities as a Christian. Songs. I learned something about songs from a situation that two friends of mine told me. They went to visit a remote part of northern Pakistan. We used to go on holidays vacations to these parts of Pakistan. Lovely places in Gilgit and Chitral and Baltistan and Skardu and Hunza, right up to the nearly to the border of China. They're lovely areas. Anyway, we all had our adventures, and one adventure for her was that she was in a certain area with her husband and the horse owner. They'd hired horses. The horse owner was a local leader, and he invited this couple to his home for a meal. And my friends learnt that the leader's father-in-law had recently been murdered. And so the woman, the Christian woman, tried to talk to the women about Jesus' victory over death, but they weren't keen to hear the message. But she had a lovely singing voice, and she sensed that maybe they would accept it if she sang. She asked if she should sing, and she did. And they asked her to sing again, and then she asked if she could pray for them. They asked her questions about the song. They listened to the same message that she had spoken before, but they didn't receive it as a message told, but they received it as a message sung. And then the man whose friend had been, the leader's father-in-law who had been recently murdered, the leader said, well, I know you live in that city over there, that city, and I've got a relative there, I've got a brother there, and I know that that family would like to hear you sing. So it was an opening through song. They asked the husband to sing too. So here's an example of the same message but put in different form, and it is acceptable. Illustrations. I'd like to say something about that. What I really want to say is that use curiosity. I like using curiosity. I find it most effective. Sometimes you will have seen me with a bag. I have those two, but I've got another one which I put books in. I used to have them use it in Pakistan, and I would put tracts about Jesus as the... his name is called Wonderful. It's a lovely tract in Urdu, and it's in Farsi, and it's in Arabic, and it's in several other languages. Anyway, lovely tract about Jesus. He is incomparable in his birth, in his sinlessness, in his life, and in his death, and in his resurrection, and so on. Okay, well, I used to carry them, and I still carry them around. I've actually got a couple with me. And I had been spending Christmas Day with a Pakistani couple, a pastor and his wife. He had about 30 villages which he was responsible for. So he got his elders and his wife and me, and we split up into teams, and we took so many villages each to lead Christmas services. And at the end of that rather busy day, he put me on a minibus to go to the city where I lived. It was about 8 miles or 10. And I think there were three seats left, and there were about 10 farmers already in the minibus. And I sat at the back, and I had this bag with me, which actually had tracts in it. And I wasn't going to particularly do anything with my tracts and give them out in the bus, but after we'd gone a mile or so, another farmer got on, and he had a bag not so different from mine. So the men said, what's in your bag? And he said, carrots. So then I just sort of piped up, and I said, I have a bag, but I don't have carrots in it. Dead silence, see? So they all wanting to know what's in my bag. And so, well, I said, I've got seed in my bag. Well, I said, actually, I've got some little booklets. And so they didn't really want to engage in conversation with me, but six men in front put up their hands. So I was in the back, so I put six of them in the different hands, and then there was dead silence for 10 minutes, I think. And then one man said, this is foreign seed. So I said, oh, no, this seed was first sown in Asia. It's not foreign seed. And then they started to ask me questions. They said, do you prefer living in Pakistan or in your own country? That's the question. Okay. So I said, well, when it's the will of God for me to live in my own country, I like that better. And when it's the will of God for me to live in your country, I like that better. But actually, I don't belong that closely to any country. I am like Abraham, who seeks a city which is above, whose builder and maker is God. So I'm like Abraham, I'm a pilgrim in this world, and so on. But I had an excellent opportunity to share, and they took the tracks away with them. It's not so cultural, perhaps, for a woman to get into this, but I mean, I seem to get into these things. So, and if you're the older you are, the easier it's to get in and to get out. So, but if you try it when you're too young, it's not such a good idea, perhaps. Anyway, but I have to tell you about I think he came from. He was a Maori from New Zealand, working with Muslims in the south of Thailand, and he happened to come to one of my seminars in India. And so he used curiosity. So let me tell you how he did it. He used to go to the tea shop, easy for him as a man. I can't go to tea shops so easily, but anyway, he went. He would go, and then he would meet some young men, just sort of meet them. And on the back of his motorbike, he had things all wrapped up. And they were very interested to know what he had wrapped up on the back of his motorbike. And he said, oh, you wouldn't be interested in what's wrapped up in the back of my motorbike. And then it became a thing of curiosity for them. So he said, oh, well, I've got some material that tells about the prophet Jesus. And they said, well, show us what you've got. And he said, well, you wouldn't be interested in what I've got. He said, well, then come to our village and show us show the people in the village. And he said, well, if I come to your village, I'm just going to that village. If I come to your village, people will get very restive, or they won't give me peace, and they won't accept what I'm going to show and all the rest of it and what I'm going to say. And they said, no, we will guarantee to keep, everyone will be very peaceful in our village. But please come and show us what you've got on the wrapped up there on your motorbike. He would go on, you know, for half an hour they'd do this. And so they were all dying to see what he had. And they guaranteed that the village would behave very properly and it would all be quiet. And so then he would go to their village, which was one of his ideas in the first place anyway. So curiosity. Don't tell it all. I remember once... there was a woman grinding. I was going out to some other villages to share the good news and coming back to this village while I was staying at night. And so in the morning when I was going out, I saw this woman grinding. And I said, you know, before the end of the world, it will be like this, that there will be one woman grinding, two women grinding, and one woman will be... taken to be with God and the other one will be left. And then I said goodbye. And she spent the day worrying about this. She spent the day thinking about this. And so when I came back, she was glad to learn more. Curiosity, probably. Well, not just curiosity, maybe. If you're grinding like this and you've just heard this thing and it goes in your mind through the day. So illustrations. Now, let's think about using people's points of contact. I've already touched on it, perhaps, but amulets I've mentioned, asking people what's inside, and if it's some word of God, some word from the Quran, then offering them a word of God from the scripture, from the Bible. The wearing of the veil. Sometimes I'm asked, why don't I wear a veil? And I don't know everyone has their own ways, so you might think that some of my methods are a bit strange. But anyway, I say, I do wear a veil. And then I say, I wear a spiritual veil all the time. I wear a veil all the time, a spiritual veil. I'm clothed with the righteousness of Jesus Christ. The prophet Isaiah said, whatever he said in chapter 61, verse 10. It's about the bridegroom, no, the bride being clothed. And I just can't remember it by heart, so you see how bad I am at remembering things by heart. But somebody got it? It's 61:10. I will greatly rejoice in the Lord. My soul will exult in my God, for he has clothed me with the garments of righteousness. He has covered me with the robe of righteousness. And I explain that spiritual burqa, which I have, that spiritual veil, which is an entire veiling. And we can discuss on the bus journey. Then sometimes a Muslim lady sitting next to me may say, well, you know our creed, there is no God but God. What's yours? And I give John 17, verse 3 as my answer, as I've already mentioned. There is one God and one mediator between God and man, the man Christ Jesus. Oh, no, that's not the summary there, but there is a summary in 1 Timothy about that. This is life eternal, that we may know you, the only true God, and Jesus Christ, whom he has sent. Well, nothing too startling for a Muslim. One God. Jesus, his apostle or sent one. But it has the idea not of just statement of belief, the idea of knowing God, the idea of relationship. And so we talk about that. Sometimes we talk about prayer. Always we talk about fasting during the month of fasting. And I'm looking for more and more answers about how to reply. Sometimes, why don't you fast? Well, the bridegroom's with us, so we're celebrating. Why should we fast? Or in the Holy Injil, it's written, come, let us keep the festival. The festival, in the original language, which is Greek, in the original language, it means, let us go on keeping the festival. For the Christian, every day is festival, because Jesus is alive and he's risen. Some of these answers. Or, how do you fast? And so that's another discussion. When I travel where people are keeping the fast, I don't generally eat or drink so that my fellow passengers don't feel uncomfortable. I don't want them to feel uncomfortable. I have to say that in the very burning heat of the northwest frontier, in the summer, sometimes when the men go off to say their prayers, I do have a sort of swig at my water in the thermos flask. Generally, there are one or two women only on the bus. But in principle, I try not to eat or drink in front. It's not because I'm fasting, but because I don't like to advertise eating and drinking or to make people feel uncomfortable about it. Pilgrimage. Well, my line is, yes, I've been on pilgrimage, but I'm always on pilgrimage because I'm seeking that city which is above. The Jerusalem which is above. Jerusalem is the second most holy shrine, I think, third most holy in the Muslim world, actually, if you mention Jerusalem. And you can talk about the pilgrim and the pilgrim city and the pilgrim way. Jesus is the way, the truth. Jesus is the way, practice. We follow him. The truth, belief. And the life, experience. The way, the truth, and the life. The pilgrim way, the pilgrim and the pilgrim city and the pilgrim way. Other words, well, I've had some very interesting conversations over words. And one of them was in the northern areas of Pakistan when it was the time when Benazir's father was in jail and likely to be hanged. Zulfikar Ali Bhutto, her father, sentenced to death. former Prime Minister. And one of the chaps in the... We got seats in the back of an open kind of vehicle, kind of jeep, and there was one seat left, and some young man got that seat. So he told us how terrible this was, that Bhutto was sentenced to death, and he said if some of us would like to die in his place. So I said, oh, really? I said, there was a law case, and I went on about this law case a bit, and I said, and there was a man who died in someone else's place, and I went on to talk about Jesus. Well, anyway, that was at least a seed sown. And there's another... Sometimes you get an opportunity. I used to go, when I was learning Punjabi and living in a village, I would go for a walk. No, nobody goes for a walk in a village. I mean, at least without a purpose. If you're going for a walk through the village, or you might be going to the place where women go to the toilet in that kind of cane field, for sugar field. There's another one that men use. So you might be going, that might be the purpose of your walk. Or you might be going to get water at the well, but you don't just walk. But I just walked. And I met a Punjabi woman going the other way, and she stopped to chat. And she asked me some questions. She said, how many houses do you own? So I said, well, I don't actually own any house. My parents have got a house, but it's not mine, and they live in England. And I've got a job here in the city, and the house goes with it. I have a house to live in, but I don't own it. So I don't own any houses. She said, my extended family, we own 200 houses. So I said, oh, really? I said, well, come to think of it, my extended family, we own more than 200 houses. And we have wonderful houses. We have houses that don't need any whitewashing, and no thief can break in and steal, and they're utterly secure. So I'm going on about these wonderful houses. And so she said, well, how can I get one of those houses? Oh, I said, it's very easy. And I had my Punjabi New Testament with me. So I got out John 14, I think it was. In my father's house are many mansions, and so on and so forth. And so I was able to talk to her about that and how you can get one of those houses. Well, you never know. It's good to think of ways of contact, either through religious terminology, which comes up all the time, as in the five practices of Islam, or just things that come out of daily life. And if you get in the habit of it, it becomes sort of a way of evangelism, and it's just becomes fairly natural. I had the Indian students laughing when I told them, well, once I was having a ride in a rickshaw, and the rickshaw set me down, and the driver, and so he asked me what the time was. So I said it was the time for salvation. But I've only done that once. But anyway, he listened, and I always offer taxi drivers and I offer rickshaw drivers. I always get a whole stack of gospels and a whole stack of tracts when I go to Pakistan. I don't use them in the frontier because it's not the place to use them. But in Karachi and Lahore, I use them regularly. And one of my friends thinks there are going to be a lot of taxi drivers in heaven, but I don't have quite as much faith, perhaps, as she does. I hope there'll be some. So one man said, well, I'm secular. So I said, well... He didn't want to accept it, you see, the gospel. The tract. So I said, well, does it mean if you're secular, you can't read any anything religious? And he said, he laughed and said, no. And so he took it. So there's a great opportunity. I see 786 up on a taxi. I say, I see, you're a religious man. Or I see, there's no God but God, and Muhammad is his prophet. Up on the taxi, so I see you're religious. Maybe you would like to read about this prophet, and they know about this prophet. And I said, it's his birthday next week. I was in Pakistan in December, so this is what I did in December. Say, well, it's the birthday of this prophet next week, so wouldn't you like just to read this? Can you read? Yes. Can you read? No. Nobody in your family can read? Oh, yes, my son can read. He's in eighth grade or something. Okay, so there are opportunities like this. So many points of contact. Generally, the one-off, this is, we're talking about one-off. But a seed there and a seed there. And God, it's amazing when you listen to people's Muslims who've come to Christ to hear how God used a seed there and a seed there and a seed there. So you're not the only person who's doing this kind of thing. And so there is much opportunity in this way. Any question you would like to ask? Or any comments you would like to make? Don't worry if you can't, turf out the whole packet of seeds. One seed was probably quite enough for one person for one day. And you don't know who's coming the next day or the next year or the next month. I like sometimes to make my statements creedal. So I'm very keen on saying, I believe in one God. That's a creedal statement. I am very keen to make statements which say I believe in very simple terms, so that it's not negotiable, it's not arguable in one sense. And Muslims identify with the statement, I believe in one God. Yes, EJ?
Have you done any Bible studies with the ancient creeds of the Christian faith with Muslims? Do you think that would be one approach that could be effective in helping Muslims to understand the historical faith?
No, I haven't done it, but I think it would be very profitable. Yeah. You're doing some study of the Church Fathers? I think that's very profitable too, because they engaged on some of these issues that we have with Muslims. Thank you very much. Well, I think we'll conclude, and let's look out for ways of teaching, like having a syllabus of the parables, and then let's think of creative ways of sharing good news as we travel, take long journeys, people want to chat, they don't have much to do. You can have very interesting stories and travels. There's one, I'll tell you one or two more another time.